Now we're holding on Samach Vav Amud Beis, 14 lines from the bottom. We learned in the Mishnah, we have the case of Habam Naira Marosa, where we said that he's Chayiv Skila, and she also, if it was consensual. We said in order for there to be Skila, it has to be Naira and Besula and Marosa. So as far as Besula and Marosa, those are necessary prerequisites according to everybody. Naira, everybody agrees, excludes Begeres. We said it in the Machlokas, Reb Meir and the Chachamim, whether it includes a Ktana as well. Granted that a Ktana itself is not going to be Chayiv Misa, would the boil be Chayiv, or would the boil be Chayiv Skila, or maybe he would be Chayiv only Chenek? Or we talked about, is there any possibility that maybe he wouldn't get, we discussed the possibility that maybe Reb Meir means that if she's a Ktana, he's Potter completely. We said that actually there might be a machlokas, there would be a machlokas tanoim on that. So the Gemara continues. Tana Rabbanan, when the pasuk says uvas ish koyin ki seichel liznos, the pasuk says when the daughter of a koyin, when she seichel to be mezaneh. Now we talked about the bas koyin extensively at the beginning of the perek, and we focused on the question at what point the pasuk says she's chayiv sreifa for her znus, and we discussed three different possibilities when exactly she would be chayiv sreifa. When she's an Arusa and she would have been getting Skila and instead she gets Srefa. When she's an Asua and she would have been getting Chenek and instead she gets Srefa, or both. So now let's focus on the word Seichel, which means to begin. So Rebbe Omer Tchila. Rebbe says it means at the beginning, as we're going to explain what he means. V'chein, as the pasuk says, only the man who lay with her is going to be executed. Meaning, we talked about, we learned earlier on the Amud, we learned yesterday that you have psukim that describe, you have a naira marosa, you have the case where the znus was consensual, and the pasuk says umeso gam shnehem, both of them are executed. Then you have after that it talks about where it was an onus, and she's not chayev nisa because it was an onus, and only the pasuk says only he gets executed. So we talked about what we learned from the word levadoi. So now Rebbe is saying that when it says uvas ish koyin ki seichel liznos, the word seichel means the beginning, as the pasuk says that only the man who lay with her is going to die. So the Gemara says, "My Kamar." What does Rebbe mean by this? It doesn't seem to be. It seems to be hard to understand what he means. What is he saying by Tchila? And what's the proof from Umeisa Ish? Omer of Huna Brei Rav Yeshua, Rav Rebbe could have been Shmuel Svirale. What it means is that Rebbe agrees with Rebbe Shmuel, Dama Arusa, Yotzilah, where at the beginning of the Perek, Rebbe Shmuel was the one who held that when does she get Srefa? Only when she's an Arusa, not when she's an Nesua. As we discussed at the beginning of the Perek, he holds that a Nesua, a Bas Koyin Nesua, would get Chenek, just like any other Nesua, only when it comes to an Arusa. So to that extent, we said he holds like a To that extent, he holds like Reb Shimon that Sleifa is a more stringent punishment than Skila. So he says with Bas Koyin, where she would have gotten Skila, then she gets upgraded one level to Sleifa. But we said there, we can't upgrade her multiple levels to go all the way from Chenek to Sleifa, and therefore he doesn't hold that she gets. So Rebbe, now we're saying, says Rav Huna B'Rei D'Rishua, holds like that opinion. V'hochi kamar, therefore, what he means to say is as follows. Im tchilas bia biznus, if the first time that she ever had bia was znus, so in other words, that again, she was an arusa, her husband even hasn't even had relations with her yet, then b'sreifa, then she's getting sreifa, as Rabbi Shmuel holds. V'idach b'chenek, and anybody else, in any other case, she would be getting chenek. So according to that, that's what Rebbe means when he says tchila. He means where this is her first bia, where her husband hasn't even had relations with her yet. The Rosh Hashanah points out, I mean, we did learn before, it's possible for there to be nisui, and it's possible for there to be chuppah and not yet bia, but still the Gemara is assuming that we had the various opinions before about when she's chayiv sreifa. We're not going to assume that Rebbe is coming up with a fourth shitta, so therefore, he's going to say, like Rabbi Shmuel, what he means is when he says tchilas bia, he just means she's an arusa. Yes, of course, it's hypothetically possible for her to have had nisuin, and not hypothetically, it could happen. She's had nisuin, but not yet bia. But nevertheless, what Rebbe is not going to make that distinction. He's just going to say that it means when she's still an arusa, like Rabbi Shmuel, rather than having a fourth opinion that would be all his own. Anyway, so what does he mean? My v'chein. So then, what does he mean? What's the comparison? As the pasuk says, "Umei so ish asher shochav im levadoi." According to that, Rebbe is saying, "Ki hosam," means that it's similar to the case of naira marasa. Ma hosam betchilas bia kamishtoikra. When it comes to naira marasa, we're talking about it was the first bia, because as we said in the Mishnah. If it was two people, then the first one is getting skila and the second one is getting chenek. So the same way as the pasuk about the naira marasa is talking about the first bia, hachanami b'tchilas bia kamishtoikra. The same way we can say that with the bas koyin, also the pasuk is referring only to the first bia, namely where she hasn't even had done bia with her husband yet. Well, Amalei Rabbi Barabaya, so Rabbi Barabaya says to Rabbi Huna Bredi Yeshua, as we've learned before, actually the Shaloh HaKadosh says the name is not supposed to be pronounced Bivi, but rather Bevi. There's a pasuk, there's a name of that, there's a name like that, and say for Ezra and Nehemiah, so he says the name of the Samorah is also that. Anyway, Rabbi or Rabbi Bevi said Barabaya says to Rabbi Huna Bredi Yeshua, he says, Mar loy hochi omar. You should know, my Rebbe did not explain it like that. And the Gemara interjects Umanu. And now when Rabbi Barabaya says, my Rebbe, then of course everybody knew who he's talking about. But we wouldn't necessarily know that. So the Gemara has to teach out for us. Umanu Rabbi Yosef. Who is Rabbi Barabaya's Rebbe? Is Rabbi Yosef. And he explained, Rebbe could have mayor severely. It's not that Rebbe holds like Rebbe, not like Rebbe holds like Rebbe Shmuel, but rather that Rebbe holds like Reb Meir, that we just said before about the case involving a katana, namely de Omar nisus. So the mayor is saying so the mayor is saying so no. In the case of the Sreifa over here, there's a different opinion of Reb Meir that's relevant over here. Reb Meir says that only if she's married to only if she's married to somebody who's kosher to her, then she gets sreifa. Reb Meir holds nisus la'echad min apsulin. If she were to be married to one of the people who's posel for her. Namely, in other words, let's say she was married to a mamzer, let's say she was married to a cholol or different things like that, where it's a where there's some kind of psul involved over there. So then right away, when she first has relations with him, then she's not considered a bas koyin anymore. If she married a regular Yisrael or Levi, or if she married a regular Yisrael or Levi, then she can't eat truma. She's not considered a bas koyin for the time being, as long as she's married to her husband, or as long as she has children, living children or descendants from him. But afterwards, she'd be able to go back to eating truma. But if she was married to a cholol or a nosin or a mamzer or any of them or anything like that, then as soon as they first have relations with her, she becomes aser to ever eat truma again. She's considered a psula. So now, Reb Meir holds, if she's married to one of the psulin, misasa b'chenek, then even though she's a bas koyin, nevertheless, she's completely downgraded from the status of a bas koyin, and therefore she only gets chenek. Therefore, v'hochi kamar. So when Rebbe says tchila, what he means is, im tchilas achalosa biznus, if the first time that she was desecrated was with znus, meaning, in other words, you could have where she's married to the mamzer, for example, or the nosin, or what have you, and the first time that she's nischalo, the first time that her kedusha is desecrated and she's downgraded from being a bas koyin, is when she and her husband first have relations. As opposed to what we're saying over here, if the first time is znus, the first thing that made her oser to ever go back to being a bas koyin, was znus, namely that she was an arusa and she's an eshes ish, she's off limits to everybody, and now somebody else comes in as mezana with her, then she's getting b'sreifa. The idach, but if it was any other case, including where she's married, including what she's married to and already had relations with her husband who's apostle, b'chenek, then she's getting only chenek. Umay v'chein. So in that case, what does Rebbe mean with the v'chein of the pasuk umeisa isha shachav ima levadoi? What does one have to do with the other? Here we're talking about with the bas koyin the first time that she was nischalal, whereas by the naira marasa we're talking about the first time that she had relations. So what does one have to do with the other? And the answer is simona ba'alma. Rebbe just means it as a simon that we should know. How do we know what the word kiseichel means? That means the beginning of something. So it helps you remember that. It helps you remember by comparing it to the naira marasa, where they also at the beginning of something. It's her first time having relations, but in fact there was no actual connection between them. He's just using it as a handy simon so that you remember what seichel means. Moving along then, we have the next cases that the Mishnah had said earlier in the perek of the people who are chayiv skila. So now we're up to hamesis. So we had in the Mishnah hamesis and hamediach. Actually, hamediach we're going to say is different. Actually, no, we did have them, both of them, hamesis, but hamediach, but we're going to discuss them separately. Hamesis Zehediot. The word mesis means a plain person, as opposed to, in other words, you can have a Navi who's mesis. You can have a false Navi who comes and tells people, let's worship that such and such an Avodah Zarah told me, or even that Hashem told me, for that matter, we should worship Avodah Zarah. So automatically we know he is a false Navi and he's Chayev Misa. However, he's going to be Chayev Chenek. Him we're going to talk about later on in the Masechta when we get to the people who are Chayev Chenek. But here we're talking about Zehediot means a plain person, a regular person, not somebody who's ever been known to be a Navi, and therefore that, and he goes, just a regular person, goes and tries to convince people to worship Avodah Zarah. V'hamesis Esahediot. And furthermore, it also means when he's trying to be mesis individuals, as opposed to the next Mishnah is going to be talking about where he's trying to be mesis rabbim, where he's trying to be mesis an entire city, where then if he's successful, then he makes them an iranidachas, but he has a different name. He's called Mediach. In fact, we learned earlier in the Perek that there are different Isurim in the Torah for each one of them. There are different Lavim in the Torah for each one of them, for a mesis where he's trying to convince an individual versus a mediach who's trying to convince an entire city. We learned earlier on Samach Gimel Amud Beis that there are actually two different psukim for that. One of them, as we said, that lo yishama al picha from this past week's parasha, the name of Avodah Zarah should not be heard on your mouth. We learn from that actually that a mediach, that it's also to be a mediach as opposed to a mesis. You have a different pasuk where it describes that a mesis is executed by Beis Din and everybody should see and hear it and be afraid of it and never again do such a thing. That's a lo yisaseh to not be a mesis. Anyway, so here in the Mishnah, we're focusing on, again, Zehediot. We're talking about a plain person, not a Navi, who's going and being Mesis. Zehediot, meaning here we don't mean Mesis as opposed to Navi. Here we don't mean Hediot as opposed to Navi. Here we mean Hediot as opposed to an entire city. Rashi explains, there's no difference as far as the recipient, as far as the listener, whether he's a Navi or a regular person. We find in the Psukim a distinction whether the Mesis, whether the convincer, is a regular person or a Navi. But when it comes to the audience, it doesn't matter whether the audience is a plain person or himself a Navi or what have you. The only difference is between a Yochid who's listening and a Tzibur and a Rabbim, the city that are listening. Anyway, how does he do his Mesis? Omar, so he'll say, Yesh Yirba Mokum Pliny, there's a certain Avodah Zarah in such and such a place. Kach Echelas, Kach Shoisa, Kach Mativa, Kach Maria. This is how it eats, this is how it drinks, this is how it benefits those who worship it, this is how it harms those who don't worship it. So he gives this kind of speech to try and convince an individual person or a small group of people to worship Avodah Zarah. We learned earlier in the Perek, actually, Rava had pointed out from a Pasuk, mentions that you have the gods from the nations near you and far away from you, that the point is you should realize, you should take a lesson. You know that the Getchkas near you are worthless. You know perfectly well that they don't eat or drink or do any of these things that this person is claiming, that anybody would claim about them. So therefore it means the same. You should realize that the same way when he's claiming about some idol, some far away, where he claims that it can do that, you would also know that it's not so, and you would know not to listen to him. The Pharisee Stroll on the Mishnah actually points out doesn't necessarily mean that he has to be using this wording. That's the usual way a person would be trying to convince people to worship Avodah Zarah. He was to tell them about the powers that this Avodah Zarah supposedly has. Actually, we learned earlier in the Perek that Rava had said that if he doesn't actually praise the Avodah Zarah in any way at all, he just says, let's worship Avodah Zarah. Then we said there that Rava had said that actually he wouldn't be considered even if the person did listen to him and worshiped Avodah Zarah, then the Mesis wouldn't be Chayev Misa. The Nissus wouldn't be Chayev, even if he, and Rashi explained over there, because since he didn't hear any praise of it, he's probably not going to go through with it. He may say, I'll go worship it, but he's not necessarily going to go through with it. So that's why the Mishnah over here mentions this point about the praise, meaning if he then agrees, you know what, that's a good idea based on the praise of the Avodah Zarah. I agree, let's go worship it, then he would in fact be Chayev Misa for that, but if he hadn't praised it, then he wouldn't unless he actually worships it. The Mishnah continues, Kol chayove misses Shabbat Torah in machminin aleihem. Now, a general rule, whenever somebody is chayev misa, we don't have edim hide out in order to observe it. We know a person is planning to be machal Shabbos or do something else that's going to make him chayev misa. We have to have that he sees that the edim are there and they give him asra. And as we learned earlier in the Masechta, he says, I don't care, I'm going to do it anyway. So you never have Edom hide out because they have to give Masra. Chutz mizu, with the exception of this one, the Mesis, where if we need to, we will have Edom hide out in order to hear what he has to say, as the Mishnah is going to go on to describe. So like this, Amar l'shnayim, if the Mesis says to two people together, and he tries to convince them to worship Avodah Zarah, then we don't need any other Edim. Hein Edov, then they themselves can be as Edim, or Mavia Noisa, and then they can bring them to Beis Din, and they can get him, they can get him to get, they can have the Beis Din, the Beis Din will determine that the guy is Chayav Skila, and no Hasra is necessary. The point, Rashi makes the point, that's the Mishnah wants to tell us, that there's no Hasra necessary, because a Mesis is one of those exceptions, is the exception, where you don't need where you don't need Hasra. It's enough that it's enough that he said it in front of Edim, and automatically then they can bring him to base and arrest him and bring him to Beis Din, and Beis Din will take over from there. So that's what the Mishnah means when it says that if he says it to two, then they can right away bring him to Beis Din. Means, in other words, they don't have to give him any kind of Hasra. What happens? Amal echad. What happens if he says to one person? Now, one person is not going to be enough of an aid against him. Hu omer. So the nisses, the audience can say, you know what? It's a good idea, but actually, yeshli chaverim rotzim b'kach. You know what? I have friends who want this idea as well. So why don't we gather them all together and you'll tell me, and then that way we'll have the edim, and then we can get him convicted. Now here's where it comes in, the hiding out the Edim. What if the guy's smart and he realizes, I don't want to tell in front of a group of people, he can't say it in front of them. He says, listen, I know what's going on over here. If I say it in front of two people, then the next thing I'm going to know is I'm going to be held in front of Beis Din. So to begin with, I want to be careful, and I'm only going to say it in front of one person. So now what we do is, so here's where we have Edim hide out for him behind a fence, for example. And then the individual can tell him, Emer Masha Marti B'Yichud. So now tell me clearly what you told me before. The B'Yichud actually can have a couple of different meanings. It can mean alone. Look, we're alone over here. You have nothing to worry about. Or B'Yichud can mean clearly, like clarify what you were saying before. And so Rashi explains the first way, and there are Mefarshim who explain it the second way. We find, by the way, it's brought about the name Yichidus, the Yichidus that a Chosid has with his Rebbe. It's explained in one of the Sichas, through the letters of the Friedrich Rebbe, that the word Yichud has a few different meanings, and one of them is clear, and another one, actually, it's in Hayomiyim, come to think of it, it's in Hayomiyim, that one of the meanings of Yichud is clear, and another one is And we see that, and here's an example where we see that we have different meanings of the word yichidus, that it means clarity, and it means being alone, and it means joining together and so forth. So here it has all that meaning that he's saying, you know, to make it clear over here, we're together, you have nothing to worry about. So the guy tells him, let's go worship this Avodah Zarah, and here's all the good things about it. For who omaloi? So now the audience, the person, the nissa, says to him, "Heich naniach haselakena b'shamayim v'neilach v'navet etzim v'avonim." Where, how could we abandon Hashem, our Father, our God in heaven, and go worship stone and go worship wood and stone? If the guy changes his mind and says, "You know what? You're right. I don't know what I'm thinking." Hareza mutav, then good. Then he's not punishable. But if he says, if he says, this is our obligation, this would be the right thing for us, then the people who are standing, but who are hiding over there behind the fence, can take him and get him and bring him to Beis Din and have him executed with skila. So that's what we mean by machminin. Machminin means that we have Edim hide out to do this kind of thing. Now the Yad Ramah points out at some length over here, he discusses, you seem to have a big question over here. On the one hand, we're saying first the Mishnah had said that he says it to two people and right away they can be as Edim, as opposed to here we're saying that when he says it to one person, then the guy has to first tell him, wait a minute, how could we do this? Why? How could we abandon Hashem? So what does it mean? So do we in fact need to, does the Nissus even need to say anything at all? Now, a different question is, why indeed? We're saying a Mesis doesn't need Asra, but every other Mechoy of Mesis Beis Din needs some kind of Asra. Why should this be different? So Tosfos, actually much earlier in the Masechta, near the beginning of the Masechta, discusses that you do in fact need some kind of Asra.
The difference is this saying to him, Heyach Naniach, Avinu Shebashamayim, this statement that the guy says, that itself counts as a type of hasra, because it gives him one last opportunity to change his mind and realize, you know what, I don't know what I was thinking. The Yad Ramah gives several other points about this. For he gives one answer. First of all, when a person is speaking to two people, then already there's a certain degree of hasra. What is he doing speaking to two people and trying to convince them? Does he not realize himself that that could make him chayiv misa and they right away could be the edim? So right away, then we don't even need anybody to tell him, Heyach Naniach. We don't even need to tell anybody to tell him, wait a minute, what are you thinking? Because the very fact that he has the breitkeit to do it in front of two people shows, in other words, that he doesn't care, and therefore it's considered as though he already has hasra. But when he's talking to one person, then there's been no hasra at all. So then, like Tosfos says, he does need some kind of hasra, and that's why you need to tell him, Heyach Naniach. That's one answer. Then the Yad Ramah gives a second answer, which is that, think about it, if he were to tell two people and they were to tell him, Heyach Naniach, then right away he would realize, wait a minute, these guys aren't on my side. I better stop now because otherwise I'm going to end up getting executed by Beis Din. So he's still going to want to be Mesis. He's just going to realize, you know what, this was a bad idea to do it to two people. From now on, I'm going to do it on a one-to-one basis. So therefore, so don't object. Let him think that he's going to get away with it, and then we can bring him to Beis Din. But when he's speaking to only one person, then if that person tells him Heyach Naniach, he has no idea that there are edim hiding out over there. As far as he knows, they really are alone. So therefore, if he changes his mind and says, you know what, you're right, I don't know what I was thinking, then it means he really is doing tshuva. So therefore, an individual person has to tell him Heyach Naniach. This is the Yad Ramah's second explanation. An individual would have to tell him Heyach Naniach, to give him that last opportunity to do tshuva, as opposed to with two people, that would backfire, because then all it means is he doesn't want to get himself killed, but it doesn't mean he really changed his mind about being a Mesis. So far, according to these two answers, the Yad Ramah points out that there would be a nafkamina. What about if the individual does not say Heyach Naniach? According to the first explanation, you do at least need that, otherwise you have no asra at all, whereas according to the second one, you don't really need it, and even if he doesn't, then the guy's chayiv misa. Then the Yad Ramah goes on with a third answer, which he says is really the best answer of all, is that, look, when he goes over to two people and starts talking to them and trying to convince them to worship Avodah Zarah, so yeah, he's chayiv misa right away. But when he comes to one person, then again, you don't have to begin with any edim. Later on, you have edim that are coming over there and hiding out. So now the Yad Ramah explains like this. If you were to just have at that point, if the Mesis just says, so now what happens? So again, the case is that the Mesis has gone over to Reuven and tells him, let's worship Avodah Zarah, why don't you come with me and worship Avodah Zarah? Here's all the good things about this Avodah Zarah. So Reuven wants to get the Mesis killed, but he knows he doesn't have Edim over there. So he arranges for Edim to hide out, to stake out the place, and then he tells the Mesis to tell me again what you said. Now at that point, the Yad Ramah learns, if the Mesis were to say, well, this is what I told you before, such and such, that wouldn't be enough to make him Chayiv Misa, because he's answering a question. So therefore, so it has to be that you get him into the role of a Mesis. So therefore, so you have to tell him, Heyach Naniach. If now he says, you know what, you're right, how could we abandon Hashem? Then fine, then no harm, no foul. But if he at that point says, you know what, we should, this is the right thing to do, then it's not just that he's replaying what he said before, now he's saying something which is a new thing of Mesis, and therefore he's actually, therefore that's enough to make him Chayiv Misa now. So three different explanations then, of why in this case the person has to tell him Heyach Naniach, whereas in the other cases he doesn't. So in any case, if the guy persists with it and he's going to be a Mesis, then the two Edim who are hiding behind the fence bring him to Beis Din and he gets Skila. The Mishnah continues. Now there can be many different expressions that, now we talked about earlier in the Perek, we talked about there can be where a person accepts that he's going to worship Avodah Zarah. So there can be many different expressions that he uses that already make him Chayiv Misa. We talked about, we talked about earlier in the Perek, the following expressions that the Mishnah is going to quote are these all expressions that the Mesis might use, which is enough to make him a Mesis, or are these talking about expressions that the Nisus might use, where if he uses one of them, then it means that he's accepted what the Mesis says, and then he was over on the mitzvah and the Torah, do not accept what he says, and that enough would be reason to make him Chayiv Misa. So the Mishnah says, Ha'omer Evoid, if he says, I will worship, And even that means, in other words, so again, so again, Rashi understands that this is referring to the Mesis, although Maharsha actually explains that it may be referring to what the Nissa says in response, that yes, you know what, I will go and worship. So in other words, he explains, when Maharsha explains, when Rashi says that these expressions of the Mesis, he means when the Mesis says something, let's worship Avodah Zarah, because these are all the good things he does, and the Nisus responds with one of these expressions in the Mishnah, then it means that the Hasasa has been accomplished, and now the Mesis and the Nisus are both Chayiv Misa. So first would be where he says, I will worship. The Kesef Mishnah points out, what do you mean, I will worship? How is that a Lashon of a Mesis? So it means, in other words, that he means, let's say, I'll worship and you come and follow me. So then he would be chayev. Eilech the Eved, if he says, I will go and worship. Whereas we learned earlier in the Perek, Rashi explains that even though it means we'll go, means there's a distance till he gets there, never, and he might change his mind in between. Nevertheless, that means that he already accepted that he's going to do it. Neilech the Navod, or if he says, let us go and worship. Or he says, Azabeach, I will go shecht a korban. Eilech the Azabeach, I will go and shecht. Neilech on Azabeach, we will go and shecht. Actu, I will burn something. Eilech v'actu, neilech v'naktu. I will go and burn, or we will go and burn. Hanasech, eilech v'anasech, neilech v'nanasech. Or he talks about in terms of pouring a libation, or sprinkling blood in honor of Avodah Zarah. These are all things, as we learned earlier in the Perek, that a person is chayav misa, no matter which Avodah Zarah he does them to. Also, eshtachve, eilech v'eshtachve, neilech v'neshtachve. And also if he says, I will bow, or I will go and bow, or let us go and bow, all of these things are expressions that of a mesis or a nisus, according to the different opinions. And as we learned earlier in the Perek, you can have a case where a person says, keliata, he says about the idol, you are my God, which is also enough to make him chayiv misa. But we talked about there can be some cases where that alone is enough to be mechayiv and misa, and other cases where we'd actually have to go and actually worship the Avodah Zarah before he's chayiv misa, and it's not enough for him to just say these expressions. The Yad Ramah actually explains that you can have that one part of the Mishnah is talking about a person is trying to convince himself to worship Avodah Zarah. So he says to himself, Eved, you know what, I'm going to go worship this Avodah Zarah. And then let's say it's not in front of him, Eilech ve'Eved, I will go and worship it. So again, he might change his mind, but nevertheless, he's still chayev. And then the same thing, where it's Acherim, where you say, Neilech ve'Navod, how about, I know there's a bunch of you who are into Avodah Zarah, you have already been convinced to worship it, how about let's all of us go? So maybe they'll change his mind, maybe they'll change their mind, nevertheless, he's still chayev. Okay. The Gemara says, when we said Mesis Zehediot, when he said Hamesis Zehediot, we said that a Mesis of our Mishnah refers to a Hediot. So what does that mean? Time of the Hediot, we're saying only because he's a Hediot, a regular person, implying Ha Navi Bechenek, implying if he had been a Navi who's telling them to worship Avodah Zarah, then, and by the way, a Navi over here, what we mean is actually, so no, we do mean a Navi who's saying in Hashem's name that we should go worship Avodah Zarah. So Rashi explains, he was previously saying Nevuah in Hashem's name, now he comes and says in Hashem's name that we should worship Avodah Zarah. Later on in the Masechta, we're going to talk about that in general, if a known Navi tells you to be over on some mitzvah temporarily, then you do have to listen to him. The classic example, the Yoho Bar HaKarmel tells them that let's go, we're going to bring a korban on Har HaKarmel, and we're going to build a Mizbeach and bring a korban on Har HaKarmel, even though this was many years after the first Beis Hamikdash had already been built, because it was an exception, a Navi is able to tell people to do that temporarily. But if he tells them even temporarily to worship Avodah Zarah, nothing doing, then we know he's a Navi Sheker. And then he gets chenek. So that's the Gemara is saying, that time of the hediyot. So we mean, because he's a hediyot, therefore he gets skila, ha Navi bechenek. Had he been a Navi who says in Hashem's name to worship Avodah Zarah, then he'd be getting chenek. Now, when we say that Amesis is a hediot, we're saying when he's trying to convince an individual, again, time of the yachid, so that means only because he's trying to convince an individual, ha rabim, implying that if he's trying to convince, if he's trying to missionize to a lot of people, to the people of a city who might then become an Ir Nidachas, bechenek, then he's getting chenek. So in that case, masnisin mani, then who would our Mishnah like be like Reb Shimon? He evidently, our Mishnah would have to be like Reb Shimon. D'tanya, Novi shidiach beskila, if a Novi tries to convince people to worship Avodah Zarah, b'skila, then he's getting skila. Reb Shimon omer b'chenek, and Reb Shimon says that he's getting only chenek for reasons that we're going to explain later on in the Masechta why Reb Shimon holds that there was this distinction. Similarly, madiche irani dachas b'skila, Reb Shimon omer b'chenek. Similarly, when it comes to people who try to convince an entire city to worship Avodah Zarah, then they get skila according to the Chachamim and chenek according to Reb Shimon. So therefore, if our Mishnah is distinguishing between Hamesis Zehediah, the Hamesis Zehediah, and saying that only they get Skila, implying that if it was a Navi who had tried to do it, then he's getting Chenech. And if it was and only when he's Mesis Zehediah, so then if we're gonna say, so we're gonna say that would be according to Reb Shimon. The problem is Ema Sefer, but look at the Sefer, the next Mishnah. Hamidiach Zeho Ema Nelech V'Navad Avetz Kachavim. The definition of a Madiach is when he says, let us go and worship idols. That's talking about people who are convincing people of an entire city to become an Irani Dachas. Now, the Mishnah again listed the reason it's an R Perek is because the earlier Mishnah on Dafnun Gimel counted them among the people who are Chayiv Skila. Asan L'Rabbanon. That Mishnah necessarily would have to be according to the Chachamim, because again, according to Reb Shimon, the people who convinced an Irani Dachas are getting Chenek. So, Reisha Reb Shimon V'Sefer Rabbanon, you're going to tell me one Mishnah is like Reb Shimon and the very next Mishnah is like the Chachamim? How does it work? So the answer is Ravina Amakula Rabbanani. The answer is that Ravina says that it would all be both Mishnayos, so according to the Chachamim. Veloizu Afzu Katani. The Mishnah is just saying not only this, but also this. The Mishnah is saying that first it says the Poshet Din that everybody agrees on, that if he's Mesis a Yochid, he's getting Skila. It doesn't mean to exclude a Navi. Now we're saying, but not only if he's trying to convince a Yochid, but even if he's trying to convince a Rabbim, Irani Dachas. So it doesn't mean that the Mishnah is implying that the Mishnah is not implying that that if he's Mesis Rabim, then he's not that in other words, when the first Mishnah at the top of the Amud said Mesis is a Hediot, it doesn't mean as opposed to Mesis is a Rabim. It just means, in other words, that the Mishnah is saying first way he's talking to a Yochid, and the second one way he's talking to the Rabim. But either way, we're talking about a Hediot as opposed to a Navi. So both Mishnayos go according to the Chachamim. Rapapa Omar, Rapapa gives a different answer. Now, Rashi points out that the correct Girsa would be Ravina Omar, which means that Ravina is going to give one answer and Rapapa is going to give a different answer, and they're not necessarily arguing. Each one is giving their own way of reconciling the Mishnayos. So Ravina's answer was both of them according to the Chachamim, and the Mishnah is not trying to exclude the case where he's trying to convince a whole of the Mishnah is not trying to convince is not not trying to is not trying to exclude the case where he's trying to convince a Rabbim. The Mishnah is just mentioning first where he's Mesis a Yochid and then where he's Mesis a Rabbim, and saying both of them are Chayiv Skila, which would be like the Chachamim. Rapapa Amar Kikatani Mesis Zehediat Lachmana. Rapapa says when the Mishnah mentions that a Mesis means a regular person, means only as far as this din of having the Edim stake him out and hide out over there. So it's not telling us that it means a Hediat as opposed to a Navi. It just means, in other words, we're using Hediat as a derogatory term for this person, that we think so little of him because he's a Mesis that we're going to try to trip him up and we're going to have Edim hide out in order to get him. So in other words, the word hediot, often the word hediot just means a regular person, but sometimes, the same way as in English, the word hediot eventually comes from Greek, eventually it developed in English into the word idiot. So here, and sometimes in Gemara terminology, we also use the word hediot in a derogatory way like that. So here what we mean is we're treating him like a hediot in the sense that we're telling him, we're saying we think so little of his life is worth so little that we're going to even have Adam stake him out in order to try and get him killed, even though we would never do that for anybody else. So therefore, so according to Rapapa, the Mishnah is not saying a hediot as opposed to a Navi, just means a hediot as in look at this idiot, look at this worthless guy that we're going to try every way possible to get him executed. And he's going to go on to bring a Braisa. So again, according to Rashi, Ravina and Rapapa are not arguing, they're just each one giving a different answer. You can understand that the hediot to the Mishnah does mean as opposed to a Navi, but it's not contrasting between being Mesis a Yochid versus Rabim, because there we're going to say that there we're going to say that either way he is Chayiv Skila. And Rapapa is saying a different answer, that we're just mentioning the Hediot insofar as this point of Achmana, and mentioning the point, look how worthless a person it is. Tosfos explains, Rabbi Natam explains in Tosfos, that actually no, there is an actual difference between their answers. They are in fact arguing. Ravina is saying that it means the same way as Mesis Zuhediot means not a Navi, so Loizu Afzu. So when the Mishnah continues, Hamesis is a Hediot means anybody who's Mesis, even a Navi. Rav Papa doesn't want to say that. He wants to say that a Mesis is a head yet means even where the Mesis himself is a Navi. So there would be an actual difference between them. Okay, so what do we mean about the Sachmana? So we learned briefly about it in the Mishnah. The Braisa goes into more detail. The Tanya, Ushar Kol Chayvim Misa Shabbat Torah Ein Machminin Aleihen. When it comes to other people in Torah who are Chayiv Misa, we never have Edim hide out to catch them. Chutz Mizu, with the exception of this one, Amesis. Ketzed Oisin Loi, what do we do? So one way the Mishnah had said is we would have them hide behind a fence. Let's say, for example, he's wary about that, so instead he's going to be looking around to make sure nobody's hiding behind fences. So instead, we can light a candle for him in an inner chamber, so he can be like deep inside, way in a private room, way inside a building, and then you have a light over there, because at that point you have no windows, so you need light over there for him to be able to see. And meanwhile, you have Edim sitting in the next room, and the purpose of the candle is it needs to be, the Edim do need to see him. It's not enough for the Edom to hear his voice. That would not be a valid Edus. There is actually a good deal of discussion about that point, because we do seem to find some cases in Halacha where we do accept voice, where we do accept the person hears somebody's voice, and sometimes it is valid. Sometimes it is valid. For example, you have a case where we hear a person's voice saying, "Whoever hears my voice, write a get for my wife." So we have an example of that, where a voice is a valid thing for that. And then the Gemara mentions in other places also that we have cases where we can rely on voice, but here we're saying that not. You need to actually see him, therefore they need to be the candle, otherwise he's gonna be sitting in the dark. But he doesn't see them. Which, by the way, you often find you can try this sometimes. For example, you're in a dark place and you're looking into a lit area, you can see, but on the other hand, he won't necessarily be able to see you because you're in the dark. So therefore, the Edom are sitting in an outer room, which is dark. You're going to be sitting the Nisus, together with the Mesis are going to be sitting in the inner room where there is light. So therefore, they'll be able to see the Mesis because he's in a lit room, but the Mesis won't be able to see them because they're in a dark room. Anyway, and then we continue with what we said in the Mishnah. The Nissa says to the Mesis to tell me in private or clearly what you told me before. And the Mesis says, and the Nissa replies, how could we abandon Hashem and worship idols? If the Mesis changes his mind and retracts, then good. If he says, no, this is what we need to do, this is the right thing to do, then the Edim who are listening from outside, they come in, they arrest him, and they bring him to Beis Din, and he gets skila. So in other words, this is another way. The Mishnah described one way when it's outdoors, the Braisa is describing a different way when it's indoors. Either way, you can have Edim stake him out, but they have to be able to see him. So therefore, in the Braisa, we need that there needs to be a candle over there, because otherwise, lamp of some kind, otherwise they won't be able to see him, and that's essential for Edus. Okay, as again, we explained before, we talked about a few possibilities that the Yad Ramah brings, why he has to actually say this, and why Tosfos and the Yad Ramah point out why he has to say this Loshen, Heich Naniach, before the guy can be considered an actual Mesis. Okay. Then the Mishnah continues. So now we have a piece of Gemara over here that was censored out in many editions of the Gemara. So here we have a piece that refers to someone named Ben Stodder, which some say is identical with Yoshka, which is where the censors figured as much, which is why they cut it out. Whether it is identical with him is just like we learned previously on Daf Mem Gimel. We had a piece where the censors also took out. Whether it refers to the same one that they believe in is questionable. Anyway,
Believe that he passed away.
No, they say he was hanged there at Pesach. He would also say that at Pesach, but he mentions Lud, and they have this supposed that he was in Yerushalayim. So whatever. Anyway, so the missing piece of the Gemara goes as follows: After we're saying that we stake him out, and we have him say his asasa in such a way that he can be chayiv misa. So the Braisa continues. This is what they did to Ben Stoder in Lud, and they hanged him on Erev Pesach, as we learned earlier in the Masechta. He's any people who are certain people who are chayav skila. Also, their body is hanged afterwards. We said according to one opinion, anybody. We said according to one opinion, anybody who gets skila gets automatically their body is hanged afterwards. And then we had then we had a different opinion, which is the halacha here. We had Rebbe Eliezer saying kol niskolim nitlin, and we had the chachamim disagreeing and saying only a magadef and an oved avod zara. So according to this, either we would say he's in the category of an oved avod zara himself, so therefore he gets hanged, or we would say that we would say that the Beis Din there in Lod was following Rabbi Eliezer, which actually makes sense in a way because Rabbi Eliezer was the Rav in Lod. So it could very well be they were following his opinion. Anyway, and let's not get too much into him. But anyway, so the Gemara asks, what do you mean we're calling him Ben Stoda, Ben Pandira? Who wasn't he actually the son of Pandira? So, Omer Rav, Omer Rav Chista, Baal Stoda Boyo Pandira. The answer is the husband of the woman who was Mizana was his mother. Her husband was named Stoda. The actual Boyo, the one who was Mizana with her, where the result is this child was born a Mamzer, is named Pandira.
Wasn't it because of Mikra?
But the Gemara continues and asks, wait a minute. Baal Papus Ben Yehuda. Don't we know that the husband who was involved in all of this was named Papus Ben Yehuda? Now, which Papus Ben Yehuda is this? Is an interesting question in itself. We do find a Papus Ben Yehuda who was a chaver of Rabbi Akiva. We have famously, when Rabbi Akiva is teaching Torah in public, then Papus Ben Yehuda came over to him and said, "What are you doing? Don't you realize you're endangering yourself?" And Rabbi Akiva gives him the whole marshal with the fox and the fish. However, it's a little hard to say that that's the same Papus Ben Yehuda over here for the simple reason that was long after the Churban, and here we're talking about that he was executed, has to obviously be before the Churban. So it could be, the obvious answer is that there was more than one Papus Ben Yehuda. Anyway, so the husband was named Papus Ben Yehuda, so what are you telling me the husband's name was Stoda? So the answer is Ela Ema Imo Stoda. Rather, the answer is that Stoda is the name of his mother. So Pandira is the name of the actual person who was Mizana with her, the man who was Mizana with her, and Stoda is the mother. The Gemara asks, wait a minute, we know that Imoi Miriam Megadla Noshi Havoi. The mother was named Miriam Megadla Noshi. Megadla means that she was braiding. She was a hairdresser. She would braid women's hair, and that was her parnasa. So we know that she was the mother. Now, of course, they also call his mother Miriam, Mary, whatever. There is actually one of the characters in their scriptures that's involved with him. There's a woman named Mary Magdalene. Some say that might be the same as Miriam Magdalene Nashaya over here. So maybe they portray her as a woman who came and followed him, but maybe according to the Gemara over here, she's his actual mother. Again, by the way, there is another Miriam Magdalene Nashaya mentioned in the time of the Amuroim, but it's clear that this isn't the one. So we'd have to say also that there's more than one Miriam Magdalene Nashaya in history. Anyway, the point is, so where is the room for Stoda exactly? The husband is Papus Ben Yehuda. The wife is Miriam Magadla Neshaya. The one who is Mizana with her is Pandera. Where does the word Stoda come in? So the answer is Kida'ami Pumpadisa Sotas Domi Baila. The answer is that the name Stoda is not her real name. It's a nickname for her. It's a derogatory nickname because they say in Pumbedisa about a woman who's Mizana, this one has turned away from her husband. Sotas da, sotas would be from the same shortage as soita. This one has gone astray from her husband. So therefore they nicknamed her Stoda. So that's why he was called Ben Stoda, because he was the son of a woman who had gone astray, who had been Mizana with another man instead of her husband. But she herself was named Miriam Magadla Neshaya. Her husband was named Papus Ben Yehuda, and the man she was Mizana with was named Pandira. In some other places, it says that maybe this Pandira was a Goyish Roman soldier, which actually might mean, technically, it might mean that the child wouldn't necessarily be a mamzer. There's actually different opinions in halacha. If an Eishes Ish is Mizana with a Jew, the child is definitely a Mamzer. If she's Mizana with a Goy, there's different opinions about it. La Halacha, the child is considered a Mamzer in this case, as long as it was consensual. But I think there are opinions of Rishonim that say that not.
Yeah. But then it doesn't make a difference if it's Eishes
Ish. He was an Eishes Ish, that's the whole point. If she was a Pnuya, it wouldn't matter, yeah. Okay. Anyway. So the point is that this Ben Pandira, Ben Stoda, whatever, he eventually grew up to be a Mesis, and that's what they did. They had Edim hide out and stake out and bring him to Beis Din, and in fact, on Erev Pesach is when they actually hanged him in Lud. So again, is it the same one that the Christians believe in? Maybe not. He also, they say, was hanged on Erev Pesach. However, they have, of course, a much different story of how it was, and in any case, they place it in Yerushalayim rather than in Lud. So, yeah.
But there's places that say Lud.
Yeah. Okay.
But no, I'm saying by Yaakov there was that Lord became Shlaim.
No, that's Luz. That's Luz Bazayan, yeah. Okay.
Fine.
Onward. The Mishnah says, Hamadiach. What is the definition of Madiach? Zehoiman, Nelech v'Navad, Avodas Kechavim, is when he says, let us go worship Avodah Zarah, and as the Gemara is going to explain, as we discussed before, it refers where he's telling a whole city and he's trying to make them an Ir Nidachas. Next. They're going to get Hedeg, he's going to get Skila. Next. Hamachashif. Then we have another one of the list on of the list in the Mishnah before that said that's Chayef Skila. So what is the Machashif of you? It means Ha'oisa Maisa. Only when he's doing actual actions of Kishuf, he's Chayef V'loi Ha'oichas Asay Naim. But not if he's just doing sleight of hand, if he makes it look with trickery, like he's creating something new, but really it's not. Really it's just he's using sleight of hand, then he's not Chayef Misa, but he would be over on a loises. We talked about before on Daf Samachay. We talked a little bit how this applies to magic shows nowadays, where magic shows are based on sleight of hand. So there are a number of poskim who don't really like the idea of magic shows, and others say there are various hetayrim, including if it's clear that he's not using actual black magic, but rather that he really is just using trickery and misdirection and things like that. Like even he might even show with one of his tricks, for example, that this is clear. Based on that, and therefore that he's making it clear like that, and that way nobody thinks that there's any magic involved.
What about hypnotizing?
So hypnotizing is also maybe in that category. So the Mishnah points out, Rabbi Akiva Oyma Mishum Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Akiva points out here is something that he learns in the name of Rabbi Yeshua, Shnayim Loiktin Kishuin. You can have, for example, two people who are both harvesting cucumbers but using magic for it. Echad loiket potter. One of them is gathering them, but he's potter from Misa. The echad loiket chayev, and the other one is doing it. Who's chayev? What's the difference? It's a maisa chayev. One of them is actually doing a maisa. There was a field full of cucumbers, and he actually used magic to pick the cucumbers and gather them all in one place. So he did a maisa, therefore he's chayev skila. The other one did sleight of hand. He makes it look to us. He does an optical illusion of some kind to make it look like all the cucumbers are gathered together in one place, but really they didn't actually move. If you were to go over and feel them, you would feel that they're not there and that they're in the original places where they grew. So therefore he's Ivan Aloysese, but he's not Chayv Skila for it. So it's an example of what the Mishnah had said between Ho'isa Maisa versus Ho'isa Sainayim. Rabbi Akiva is giving us an actual example of that. So he'd still be Chayiv Malchus, yeah. Okay, so the Gemara says, when we said in the Mishnah, in the beginning of the Mishnah, about a Mediach, Omer of Yehuda Omer Rav, Madichi Eir Nidachas Shonu Kan, here we mean a Mediach of an Eir Nidachas, as opposed to the previous Mishnah, where it's talking about a Mesis of an individual or a small group of people. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Machashif Zah Oisa Maisa V'chola. We said a Machashif, that's Chayiv Skila, is somebody who does an action as opposed to the Oisa Zaseinahim. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan. Now, in this past week's parasha, we had the Pasuk, Machashifa Loisa Chayiv.
Right.
So literally, Machashifa means a witch, a woman who does Kishuv. But, so Machashifa, Echad Ha'ish Ve'echad Ha'isha. It actually applies equally well to a man or to a woman. Imkain Matalam Matamalam Machashifa. So why did it say Machashifa in the feminine? Because most of the time it's women who do kishuf, but not to say that a man who did such kishuf wouldn't equally well be chayev.
Yes, they couldn't believe that witches used to fly on like brooms.
And never mind all that. Never mind about flying and all that. But yeah, the point is that I don't know. But the point is we find in various places that women. First of all, think of it in Pirkei Avos, for example. You have the expression ma'aber noshim ma'aber kshofim. So we said women were more prone to doing witchcraft for whatever reason. Sometimes they might, for example, do it because they want to hold on to their husband's affections. They figure that their husband is interested in somebody else, let's say, and they're going to use black magic in order to that he should stay with them or something. Whatever. It's not important why, but the fact is not important why really, but the fact is that's how it was that women tend to be more the practitioners of kishuv, and therefore dibra torah. Therefore the torah talks torah roiv to dabra. The torah talks about how things typically are.
Didn't what's his name? Shaul HaMelech used Kishuv.
Shaul HaMelech used in Balas. Oh, if we talked about the other day, yeah, we had.
So how is it better?
It wasn't, but he figured it was Pikuach Nefesh, but whatever. Yeah. Anyway,
and was it?
Yeah, whatever, anyway. So the Pasuk does count it as one of the things he did wrong. But so you have that. You have, we learned.
Who killed all those?
We have Shimon and Shatach with his 80 witches that we learned earlier. Yeah, so we have examples like that. But the Bala Turim actually on the Pasuk points out, you know, the word Machashefa. You can take the hay from the end of the word and put it at the beginning, and it makes the word Hamachashef, so therefore it means equally well a man. Okay, fine. So next, misasin b'ma. How exactly is the machashef or machashefa executed? Rabbi Yosef Aglili says we can learn that it's hered, that it's sayif as follows. Here the pasuk says, do not allow a machashefa to live. When it comes to killing the seven nations of Canaan, it says do not allow any of them to live. So, malahalan b'sayif, afkan b'sayif. So over there, it involves a sword because whenever they fight against the goyim in an army, they're fighting with a sword. And we find, for example, by Sichon and Og, where it mentions that they killed their people with a sword. So therefore, it actually points out, yeah, by Sichon and Og, by Kehi Yisrael l'fichorev, afkan b'sayif. So the same way over here, the machashefa would be getting sayif. Rabbi Akiva says, I have a different gzeira shava. By Matan Torah, where it says nobody's allowed to go up onto Har Sinai until after Matan Torah. If any animal or any person goes up there, lo yichya, he will not live. Now by Har Sinai, they're getting skila, as the pasuk says, soko yisoko, lo yora yora. They get stoned and they get thrown down. And we learned earlier in the Masechta that those are the parts, those are the ways that skila is done. Afkan beskila, the same way over here, it means the machshefer is getting skila. Omalo Rabbi Yossi, so Rabbi Yossi says to Rabbi Akiva, wait a minute, my Gzeira Shava is better than yours. Ani danti loisachaya mi loisachaya. I'm being done the exact same expression, loisachaya, in both places, here in the seven nations of Canaan. But after danta loisachaya mi lo yichya. You're doing from lo yichya, which is a different phrase. Now, sometimes the Gemara does point out, sometimes we will use Gzeira Shava when we don't have an alternative, then we'll use even words that are dissimilar. But in general, Gzeira Shava should usually be identical words. Amalei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, no, my limud is better. Ani danti Yisrael mi Yisrael. I'm learning a case involving a yid from another case involving a yid. The machshef lo yisachaya is a Jewish man or woman who's practicing kishuv. By Har Sinai, we're talking about a Jewish man or woman who would go up to the mountain. Misses Harbe, and we find by Jews the Torah says there's four different kinds of misses. So therefore, so we learn skila. You're learning from goyim shaloi riba b'henakosuv. By goyim in general, you only have one misa, like we learned earlier in the perek, where we learned all about the shevet metzvot bnei noach. We said that always the punishment for them is sayif, is being killed by the sword.
So, you know, shaman...
because it means Rashi explained by Sichon and Og, we see that they were killed by their people were killed by the sword. Yeah. So the point is, says Rabbi Akiva, so therefore, so it's not valid to learn from a case involving goyim. Yeah, by goyim it's sayif, because by goyim there's always only sayif. So it's better to learn from another case, from a case involving Jews, where there are four different misses available, and yet we see that by Matan Torah, the Torah is mentioning skila.
Why
would Afka skila? You can ask, but that's how it is. Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. Next, Ben Azai says here's another way of learning it. The pasuk says that you don't allow a machshefa to live. The next pasuk continues, kol shoychev behema, moisiumos, anyone who lies with an animal is put to death. Meaning that we have a smichos, we have two psukim back to back. Ma shoychev behema b'skila, just like a person lies with an animal, the chayev skila, and that it says in Parshas Kedoshim, because it says on it dmehem bom, and as we learned earlier in the perek, dmehem bom means skila. Afkan, af machashef, b'skila, the same way the machashef is getting skila as well.
With any
possible
that someone gets
skill. Well, that's Ben Azai is learning this way, but Rabbi Yehuda doesn't like that. Omalei Rabbi Yehuda, v'chim ipneishes somche inyan loy notzil ozeb skila. Are you telling me just because you have two psukim back to back, then we're going to take him away from a possibly lighter punishment such as sayif and give him the harshest punishment, which is skila? In fact, Tosfos brings from a Gemara in Yevamos that says, from this little exchange over here, we learn that Rabbi Yehuda in general does not hold of the concept of smuchim. The fact that we sometimes say that in the Torah, because we have two mitzvahs, two psukim back to back, we can learn one from the other, Rabbi Yehuda holds of that concept only in Chumash Devarim. But in the other four Chumashim, he does not hold of that, and we see that from here, because here we see Rabbi Yehuda. Why in Devarim is different is because Devarim is Moshe's speeches to the people, so we can say that he gave them one after the other, so he had a reason to put them together, but as opposed to the rest of Chumash, was different times, different things. So the point is, we see from this exchange that Rabbi Yehuda does not hold of Smuchim, because that's why he's saying to Ben Azai, your Smuchim is not a valid reason to say Skila. Ella, Rabbi Yehuda says, I'll tell you a different way we can learn that a Mechashif is Chayiv Skila. Rabbi Yehuda says, Ella, You have to think of it like this. The Torah says in general that you're not allowed to do kishuf. Then it mentions specifically oiv and yid oini, and it says that they're chayiv skila. V'loma yotzu, so why are they singled out? Lahakish elehen, to compare everything else to them. V'loma loch, so it tells you. Ma oiv yid oini b'skila, af mechashif b'skila. Just like oiv and yid oini are getting skila, the same way all the other ones. Meaning, in other words, this is an example of dover shohi b'chlal v'yotzim and aklal l'lamed. The loy l'lamed al atzma yotze, it doesn't just teach us about itself. El l'lamed al klal kulo yotze, it teaches us about the whole klal. So here, therefore, that's what we're doing. We're saying, once it says by oiv and yid oini, which are two types of magic, that is chayiv skila, then we learn from that that the other kinds of magic are also chayiv skila. He's learning by binyanab, basically, yeah. Not by binyanab, but rather by dover shohi b'chlal v'yotzim and aklal l'lamed. Well, the question is, the Rabbi Yehuda nami, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, why does that work? Lehevu oiv v'yid oni shnei k'suma boim k'achod. Why don't we say that oiv and yid oni are two psukim that teach us the exact same thing, and we have a rule, v'chol shnei k'suma boim k'achod ein melamdin. When we have two psukim like that, then we don't learn from it anywhere else, because we always say, if there's only one pasuk, then we say that we learn a binyanav from it. But once we have two psukim, then it means that we're saying that no, only those two and not anything else.
If it's together, then.
No, it doesn't matter whether it's together. But the point is, once you have where it says by oiv is chayiv skila and yid oni is chayiv skila, the very fact that it says only by the two of them means only the two of them, a chayiv nisa, a chayiv skila, and the rest of them are not.
So what's in a binyanav?
The binyanav is like that. If we only had by oiv, then we could say that from binyanav, we would learn, from oiv, we would learn to everything else. But now that it says oiv and yid oni, maybe it means only them. The answer is Amar Rabbi Zecharia Ado Amra. So Rabbi Zecharia says, from this you see, this tells us that Rabbi Yehuda holds that two psukim that say the same thing we could learn from it in other places. Now, the Gemara elsewhere explains that even Rabbi Yehuda is going to agree that three not. But Rabbi Yehuda is going to say, just because you have two psukim teaching us the same thing, Rabbi Yehuda does not consider that a problem to learn from it to other places. So he's fine with saying that it says oiven yidoni, a chayiv skila, and we can make a binyan av from that to everywhere else and say that the other kinds of kishuf are also chayiv skila. The difference is actually a binyan av doesn't necessarily have to be within the same category.
It's just one pasuk that goes on.
Yeah, but a binyan av doesn't have to be within the same category as opposed to dover shayi b'chlal, v'yotzim ha'klal lamed. So I'm in a general category where the Torah singles out one thing. Yeah.
So any type of like kishuf, it's better.
Okay, now a little agadah on the subject. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Lama Nikra Shman Kshofim. Why is magic called Kshofim in Lashon Kodesh? Shema Kishin Pamalya Shalmaila. The word Kishof is short for the words Machishin Pamalya Shalmaila. It weakens the power of the host in Shemayim. Meaning, in other words, you can have somebody. The based in Shalmaila had decided that this person is going to live, and meanwhile they get killed with Kishof. So it comes out like they weaken and they contradict the power of the power of the Pamal Yoshamayla. So what does this mean? Now the Sefer Achinuch explains, in other words, like this: you can have that you have Hashem Himself, of course, is beyond all this, but Hashem delegates, so to speak, to different mimunim, different malachim, or whatever, that are going to accomplish things in practice. Kshofim are able to temporarily overpower that thing. So here you have like Hashem has given them instructions, but Kishuv is able to temporarily overpower that. So therefore, so that's what we mean. Machishin Pamal Shamaila contradicts and it weakens, so to speak, what eventually the Pamal Shamaila is going to do their job. But nevertheless, it makes it possible for it to be delayed or for it to be done differently. Yeah. Now, in this connection, the Gemara says, when the Pasuk says Ein Oid Milavade, there's no other power, there's nothing else other than Hashem. So Rab Chanina says, actually, that means even as far as Kishuf. Even Kishuf, not like we just said, that it has the ability to override what Hashem is saying. Rab Chanina is saying that Kishuf does not have that ability. And the Gemara gives an example. Again, a woman who, as we said before, women tend to do kishuf more. Dahavas kamahadra lemishkal afra mitusi kare de Rab Chanina. She was trying to take some dirt from under Rab Chanina's feet. So Rab Chanina is standing there, and she's trying to take some dirt from around his feet because she was going to use it for kishuf against him.
Oh, that's the thing with the pulling in why I needed
Yeah, Omar law. So he tells her. So he tells her. Imastayas. You know what? If you think you're going to be helped, Minashamayim. If you think that you're able to do this kind of kishuv, zili avidi. Go ahead and do it. I don't care. Ain oid milavadei ksiv. There's no other power other than Hashem. So I'm not concerned that your kishuv is going to have any effect against me. Meaning, in other words, Marsha teaches that this Gemara is also in Chulin. Marsha teaches out over there. Ain oid milavadei means there's no one other than Hashem. There's no oid. There's no other who can override what Hashem says. So kishuv can be overridden by Hashem, but not vice versa. So Rav Chanina is not worried about her potential kishuv. So the Gemara says, but wait a minute. Ain Amar Rabbi Yechanan lama nikkush shmachkishin pamayishamayla. We just said that they're able to weaken and to override pamayishamayla. So why isn't Rav Chanina concerned? And the answer is Shiny Rav Chanina, the Nafish is a chusei. The difference is Rav Chanina has tremendous chusim. He's a level of a tzaddik where he's beyond any of this thing where kishuf can harm him. So therefore he's immune to it. He has a he his whole metzius is einod milavadoi, and therefore he has nothing to worry about from her kishuf. A regular person who's not as tightly connected to Hashem, then yeah, they have what to worry about the effect that kishuf could have on them. I remember once hearing a story, by the way, a story that took place during the Holocaust, where some people, I don't remember the exact details of the story, but something along the lines of that some people, some a couple of Jews, a family were trying to escape from the Nazis, and they had to go through some very dangerous territory in the process. And the father tells them, you have to keep absolutely in mind, without getting distracted from it for a moment, of Einod Milavadoi, and we'll be able to get through safely. And the story goes that, yeah, they did that. They were really concentrating continuously on Hashem and nothing else. And I think for one moment over there, one of them was slacking off a little bit, and the Nazi officers came into the train and started checking papers or whatever, something like that. But then they realized we have to really strengthen ourselves in that, and they got away safely. So that would be a similar kind of thing to hear what Rav Chanina is saying. Okay. The Gemara continues. Omer ab Aivu bar Nagri, Omer ab Chiya bar Abba. So here, let's talk about once we're talking about Kishuf, then naturally we should talk about the magicians in Mitzrayim. Now we find when it comes to duplicating the Makkos, there's two different expressions. First, it says that they tried to duplicate it bilotehim. Then it says belahatehim. Actually, it's the other way around. First it says you have bilotehim and you have belahatehim, where you have when they tried to duplicate when Moshe comes to Paray with his signs about the stick turning into a snake and then pouring water on the ground and it turning blood or whatever. So the Mitzrayim duplicated that. Then afterwards, you have Makas Dam, it also says they duplicated. So it uses two different words, bilotehim and belahatehim. Bilotehim elu ma'aseh shedim. The word Lotehem refers to when they use shadim to accomplish their kishuf. The word lot means in secret. So this means shadim that usually are hidden creatures. They don't usually come out in public. So now they're using shadim to have them do their magic. Belahatehem, the word belahatehem, elamais kshofim, this means that they did the kishuf themselves using their magic spells and things. As we find by after the Chet Tadas, where it says that there was a turning sword over there that seems there was a sword that Hashem placed over there that seems to be turning by itself. Now, by itself, it seems like Kishuf. So you'd have the sword is constantly rotating. There's no shed turning it. So it seems as though it's magic, as though it's turning by itself by magic. So therefore, lahatehem refers to something like that, where it's magic and you can't even say a shed is doing it. It seems to be happening all by itself. Marsha discusses so which one is which. Actually, we have the girsa over here that we're saying lotehem is ma'aseh shedim and lahatehem is ma'aseh kshofim, but you actually have girsois that say the other way around. And the other way of looking at it is actually lahatehim could refer to shadim in the sense that he brings from the Oruch that lahatehim refer to shadim, and the point is shadim are constantly changing their shape and their color and their appearance and whatever, the same way as a sword is constantly moving and rotating. Okay, so it's two different kinds of kishuf. So Abaya says in this connection, decopied here's a way to tell the difference. Here's a way to tell the difference whether which kind of kishuf a person is using, whether he's using shadim or whether he's using his own spells or things. Incidentally, as far as using shadim, by the way, there is quite a bit of discussion among Rishonim on the subject, because later on in the last perek of Or Masechta and Perek Chelek, we do talk about the Gemara mentions over there that you are allowed to ask certain kinds of shadim questions.
The Gemara mentions over there, sore shemen, sore beitzim, the shadim that have to do with oil or with eggs. So we see there is a certain validity to asking shadim. But here we seem to be saying that it's considered part of kishuf. So there's different answers. The Yad Ramah explains over there that he says. So first of all, he says the fact that our Gemara doesn't say that it is allowed to use shadim implies that it is in fact that it is in fact osir. So then you can say then. So what would the Yad Ramah do with the Gemara later? So the Bach explains that he would say that it's not so much they're also because of kishuf, but they're also because a person is putting himself in danger. As we're going to go on to say in the Gemara over here, once you're calling on shadim to help you with something, the shadim might instead attack you. So the Yad Ramah would say that when we're saying over here, you can't use shadim, just means because of the danger involved. Different other Rishonim, the Tur doesn't learn like that. The Radvaz learns differently also. So a different answer is that you're allowed to ask them questions. Later on, we're talking about the Rosh explains. For example, let's say you lost something or something was stolen. You want to know where it is. You can ask a shed to where it is, but not to actually have him do something for you. That the Gemara would be saying over here is also.
I don't know, to say that kishuf can only happen if a person is like, it only affects it, like the place that usually someone goes.
No,
I guess someone goes.
No, no. Okay, so going on, Omar Abaya, so Abaya says, here's a way to tell the difference. Dekopid Amona, if we see that the magician is particular to use certain kalim for his magic, shed, then you know that he's using a shed for the purpose. A Deloitte kofid amona, but if he's not being machped out and he'll use whatever tool comes to hand, kshofim, then you know that it's kishuf that he's doing of his own, not involving shadim. So again, does that mean that it's actually also to do things of shadim, or does it mean that not? That's what we were just talking about. The Ramah does point out, even if you say that you are allowed to use shadim, nevertheless, the Ramah says, in practice, people don't end up coming out of it safely, so shema nafsha yuchak mehem, a person who guards his life, would be careful of getting involved with shadim in the first place. Okay, next, the Gemara continues, Amar Abaya, Hilchus Shofim ke Hilchus Shabbos. The halachas of Kishuf are similar to the halachas of Shabbos in that you have several different levels. You have things that are osir, things that are completely osir, versus you have things that are completely mutter, and then you have things that are in between. Namely, yesh mehen beskila, there are some things where a person does them and he's chayv skila. Yesh mehen potter, there are some things which are osir to do, but a person is potter from punishment. And you have some things that are mutter lachatchila. Namely, the distinction is ha'oisam ma'isa, when a person does an actual action of kishuf, then as we said in the Mishnah, then he's getting skila. And that's as far as Shabbos. If he does one of the 39 malachas, then he's getting skila. If he's grabbing people's eyes and doing sleight of hand and optical illusions like that. So we said in the Mishnah, so he's potter aval aser. Then so the same thing with Shabbos. We have many things for which a person, have many things that a person would be doing, which is aser, but he's not chayv skila for it. And then we have ha'oisa mutar lahatchila. What do we have examples of kishuf that are actually mutar lahatchila? Just like on Shabbos, we have certain things that we're allowed to do, which on the face of it are malachas, but nevertheless you're allowed to do it. So, for example, Rashi explains that. Listen, when it comes to Shabbos, you have of course the malachas of chayiv skila. When it comes to you have shvus, you have a person does things that are drabon and it's potter aval aser. But then we have some examples that, on the face of it, seem to be a malacha that are not. Examples that Rashi gives are, let's say, for example, a Mishnah in Shabbos gives an example. Let's say a deer ran into your house. Now, let's say, for example, one person is sitting right in front of the door and preventing the deer from going out. Now, let's say you would be able to sit next to him, even though you're also in front of the door because you're not directly in front of it. The deer is already trapped in the house by the first person. He was over on the Isser, but you were not. Now, what happens if that person gets up and leaves? You're allowed to continue sitting there. Because of you, the deer is not going to go out, but it was already trapped before you, and therefore you're allowed to keep it there. A similar example, the Gemara mentions, let's say a bird flies under somebody's coat, he'd be allowed to sit there and keep it there till after Shabbos. And then after Shabbos, he has a bird that he can use as a pet or to shecht or whatever. Because again, he didn't actually trap it. Another example Rashi brings is, let's say have an example where a person, another example is, for example, a person has a boil or an infection like or something like that, and he cuts it open on Shabbos to get out the pus. So you're not allowed to on Shabbos when he's doing it in order to make an opening for it so it'll heal. That's also on Shabbos, but to just get out the pus because it's uncomfortable, that would be allowed. And there's other examples. So the same way, there are things that on Shabbos that on the face of it should be also, but really in fact they're mutter. And we have several examples. So now, as far as kishuf, you have similar kinds of things. When you have there's kishuf which is actually chayiv skila, where he's actually doing an action. We have kishuf which is Usur, which is also, as we said, where it's sleight of hand, where he's tricking people into thinking that he's doing something. And then you have mutter l'chatchila. What would be an example of something that's mutter l'chatchila? Kidder Rab Chanina v'Rab Oshia. As we have the example of what Rab Chanina and Rab Oshia did, as we learned a couple of dafim ago, kol malish Shabbos havu aski b'hilchos yitzira. Every erev Shabbos, they would delve into sefer yitzira and then use the powers of kedusha, the powers of names of Hashem that are in there. Or mivri l'hu egla tilsa, they would create with that a tilsa calf, which we talked about before, what tilsa means. It means third born, it means one third grown, etc., whatever, a high quality calf. And they would eat it. So we see that even though on the face of it, that kind of thing is kishuf, but it's not real kishuf because Rashi explains this is Maisa Kadosh Baruch Hu. This is using names of Kedusha, and therefore that's not a problem. The problem would be when a person is using Kochas of Tumah. To do things, but when he's using Kirkus of Kedusha, then there's no problem with it, and then he's allowed to do such a thing.
That's in the Shema Farish.
What?
It's also like
so Shem and Farish would be an example of that as well. Yeah, like practical. We're talking about like practical Kabbalah. Yeah. So that's the so we see, in other words, there's a certain comparison between them in that there's a certain comparison between them in that the same way as with Shabbos, you have three levels like that. The same way with Kishuf, you have three levels like that. So the Maharal goes in one of his Sfarim in Be'er HaGolah goes actually into some detail and talks about a deeper reason why we're comparing Shabbos to Kishuf, because basically with Shabbos we're recognizing that Hashem created the world. Kishuf, we said before, is like trying to oppose Hashem's control of the world. We said before, so therefore there's a certain similarity and a certain opposition between them, where the same way as there can be different ways where a person breaks Shabbos, the same way there can be different ways where a person is doing kishuf, where you have things which where he's not actually breaking Shabbos, and the same way you have things where he's not actually contradicting Hashem's control over the world. On the contrary, he's strengthening it, and he's using names of Hashem and things like that in order to create things in the world. Okay. Going on, going further on this topic of further on this topic of Kishuv. Amar Rav Ashi, Chazinu le'avur de Karna. So Rav Ashi says, I saw the father of Karna. Now we live now in some places in Shas, you have Karna and Amora who lived in the time of Rav and Shmuel. Obviously, Rav Ashi couldn't have seen him, so it would have to be a different Karna. The nofetz v'shodi he would be blowing out, and he would be making pieces upon pieces of silk cloth come out of his nose. So this is an example of the power of kishuf. So it could be this avur dekarna with a goy, and therefore in that case the goy is not necessarily allowed to do kishuf, but at least he's not punishable for it. This karna may have been a yid, and Rav Ashi is saying that he shouldn't have been doing it, but nevertheless I did see him do it, and I see and we can see how strong the power of kishuf is.
What is the kishuf up to for myself? Like,
So we're saying there's a difference between actually doing it. No, there's no mitzvah to do kishuf. No, it's an aveira. But, yeah.
What if you use kishuf to do a mitzvah?
No, we don't even to do a mitzvah. No such thing. You can't.
If you see,
okay. Anyway, whatever. No, yeah.
Hypothetically.
Okay, I don't know. Hypothetically, I don't know.
Kishuf gets
fine. If you can think of an example, then fine. I don't know. Anyway, whatever.
Superpowers.
Yeah. So whatever. Okay. Anyway, so again, the idea is so again, there is this comparison between Kishuf and Shabbos. On Shabbos, so the Maharal explains, okay, the difference is that on Shabbos, you're not allowed to do Malacha because the world was completed on Shabbos. And when it's completed, you don't need to do Malacha. And then you have things that are also in HaTorah, things that are Midrabanan. And then you have things which are not in opposition to Shabbos at all because they're not considered Malacha. So the same way when it comes to Kishuf, to do Kishuf would imply as though the world is incomplete and he has to use Kishuf to make it better. Then you have him, he's not Oysamais. And that's Potter Aval Osir. And then you have, well, he's not making a change in the world, but rather he's using Hashem's names. The world itself was created with Hashem's names, so therefore there's no problem with it. So that's the comparison, says the Maharal. Okay.
So they use silk from the
No,
same
so this
cloth.
is counter what he was doing with silk, yeah.
Take
Okay.
use of it.
No.
No.
Okay. Going back to the magicians in Mitzrayim, so we said that they say that the Chartumim said to Pare, this is the finger of Hashem. They said by Makas Kinim. So why they say that? What happened all of a sudden? We can see from this that with a shed, you can't create something smaller than a barley grain. Since the lice are smaller than that, then they couldn't create them with shading. Marshall makes the point then, fine, they couldn't create them with shading. Didn't we just say before that they can use Kishuf instead? And there doesn't seem to be any such limitation on Kishuf, so why don't they do that? So the Marashar explains because with Kishuf you have other limitations. Obviously, you can't say that with Kishuf it's possible, as the Gemara is saying, to create things, but it can't be they can just create anything. I mean, otherwise, a Machashif could create a whole new world. So therefore, so it only mentions the balahatehem and the balotehem when it came to the sticks turning into snakes, and then only when they tried to do makas dam. The other things they didn't even have, their kishuf wouldn't even work in the first place. A shed they could do, so they did with a shed. They did tzfardeya as well, but then it came to kinim, and now they're stuck. They can't do it with kishuf at all, and with shadim they're limited in the size of it.
But so why by the other markets
By the other
didn't
makas, so once they saw that they couldn't duplicate kinim, they didn't bother by the other makas. So that's what Marshall continues. Yeah. Okay. Rapapa says no. Like Kim, I swear in the Eibush's name, I feel like a gamla namale motzi bari. The fact is, mechashvim are not even able to create even a large creature like a camel. So what does it mean? They can't truly create anything. Not only smaller than a barley grain, they can't really create anything. The difference is high michniflay, mahayle michniflay. The difference is larger creatures. It's easier for a mechashif to use his magic to gather them together so that they so so as it appears that he brought it out of nowhere. Mahayle michniflay, as opposed to small creatures, it would be much harder for him to gather because they can't really travel that far. So the reason why the mechashvim couldn't duplicate makas kinim, says her papa, had it been, for example, Makas Arev, it would be much easier for them. They could use their magic to cause an animal that lives somewhere else in the world to come there quickly. That such a thing could work. But to get together tiny little creatures like lice and have them be able to go that far that quickly, that they wouldn't be able to do. So therefore, that's why they couldn't duplicate it. So the Gemara continues. So Rav one time asked Rav Chiya, who was also his uncle. He says, I one time saw a Taya, an Arab, the Shakli Lasafsira. He took a sword, the Gaide Lagamla, and he chopped up his camel into pieces. The Torah flavor tavla, then he rang a bell in front of the dead pieces of the camel, but come, and it stood up back alive again. So how was he able to do that? Amalei, so Rav Chiya asks him, Lebosahochi, after it was all over, after the camel was back together, Damu Pauta Mihavoi, was there any blood there, or was there any waste from the camel? If he had cut it up, it's impossible all of that would have been put back together. There should have been some blood stains, and there should have been some waste from inside the camel's stomach that was still left over there. Ela, so you should realize the whole thing was just an optical illusion. You can't truly create anything. You can't bring anything alive again. So therefore, no, if the camel was really dead, he wouldn't be able to be Mechaya Mason.
Isn't he from bones? Are you able to make that? Oh, that was
No, I mean, that was Yechezkel was able to be Mechayim Mason from bones, but that was Yechezkel was doing the power of Hashem.
question.
Rav Chiya is informing Rab that Mechashvim do not have the power to create life. There's a Medrash actually that says someplace else that, for that matter, even if all the scientists in the world would get together, they couldn't create life. So yeah. The Gemara gives another example. Ze'iri Iklal Alexandria Shemitzrayim. Ze'iri one time visited Alexandria in Egypt. Zavan Chamra, and he brought a donkey over there. When he came to give the donkey water to drink, Poshar, the machshef was melted away because Rashi explains any kind of thing created by kishuf can be tested with fresh water. If it's made, if something made by kishuf, the kishuf will melt away when it comes in contact with water.
So anything that's kishuf, you should put water on it.
That's the point. So now he went to give it a drink. Poshav become gamla duskinissa, and it became a piece of a plank of wood from a bridge. So Rashi explains gamla means a bridge, and skunissa is a type of wood. So gamla de skunissa would mean a bridge made out of this type of wood. So now it became a plank of that wood. So he doesn't need a plank of wood; he needs a donkey. He went back to get a refund. They told him,
Was he
Elav.
trying to test if it was really
He
real?
wasn't trying to test it. He didn't know that it was.
Oh, you just get the warning.
So he wanted a refund. Omrulay, they told him, Elav. You should know. If you were not Ze'iri, Loi Hava Ma'adrin Loch, we
There you
wouldn't
go.
refund you your money. You're important. You're an important person. So therefore, we'll go the extra mile. We'll return you your money. But otherwise, you should know. Mi'ika Midi Hocha. How could there be anybody else
I
who
tell
buys
you.
anything here in Mitzrayim, which is full of
Right.
Kishuv, without testing it with water. So anybody should know, if you're buying in Mitzrayim, you got to test it with water
Okay.
first, because otherwise it may have been made with Kishuv.
But if you write on it, it's gonna work.
What is writing on it? What is writing on
If
it?
you're writing on
He's
it, no.
writing. He's writing on it. Fine, but then he came to give it water. I don't know. As long as it's Okay. Another example. Yanai, a man named Yanai, Iklolahu. Now he wasn't Reb Yanai. Rashi points out. We're going to see in the story that he himself did Kishuv. So he's obviously not Reb Yanai, the Tana. He was Stam, a person named Yanai. Iklolahu. He one time visited a certain inn. Omolahu Ashkian Maya. He tells them, "Give me some water to drink." Krivu. So they brought him to drink a drink called shisisa, which the Gemara mentions in various places is made out of flour mixed with is made out of flour mixed with water. So it's like a very thin. And so it would be, in other words, not just plain water. It's like a like nowadays, like you put powder in water to make Kool-Aid or something like that. So this was a similar drink to that. He noticed as they were serving him the drink, that the woman who was serving it to him, she was whispering something. So he realized that she had cast a spell on the shisa drink. He poured some of it on the ground, havu akrave, and it became scorpions. So he realized that they were trying to harm him. So he decided to get back to
Shmack.
her. Omalahu.
Wow.
So he tells them, "Anosh, listen, I've drunk some of your drink. After namish, you also drink something of mine." Ashkia, so he offered her a drink with water that he had put a kishuf on. Havoi chamra, and she became a donkey. Rochva, now he's riding on her, solik and going out to the market. Also chavata, but then a friend of hers came along and saw when another woman who does kishuf came along, poshola, and she undid the kishuf. So all of a sudden, everybody can see that Yanai is riding on a woman's back in the marketplace, which even for a Russia like him, that would be a horribly embarrassing thing. So in other words, he got what was coming to him. He shouldn't have tried to get back at her. Okay. Speaking of the Makkos, let's talk about one more thing involving the Makkos. The pasuk says, "Vatala tzfardeya v'tachasas eretz Mitzrayim." The tzfardeya came up and covered the land of Mitzrayim. Now, tzfardeya is in the singular.
That's your clue.
So what does it mean? One. So Omer Rabbi Elazar, tzfardeya achas hoisa. It means it was one frog. Hishritza. It produced lots of children. Umila kol eretz Mitzrayim, and thereby it filled up the whole land of Mitzrayim with frogs. So the Gemara points out, "Ketanoi." This is actually a machlokas tanoim. Rabbi Akiva is the one who says that it was one frog that filled up the whole land of Mitzrayim. By the way, I was looking this up a while ago because somebody, not so long ago, because somebody asked me. We actually don't find any source until apparently modern times that says it was a big frog. We all learn as kids it was a
Yeah, it's
gigantic
massive. Oh,
frog,
yeah,
and
it
there,
is.
but there, but the Gemara and the Midrashim never used the word that it was big. The first,
Well, it could
the
be a tiny frog that
Whatever,
just.
there's a normal size frog it could have been, but the earliest so far, the earliest source that I've ever seen that says it was a big frog is actually the Hebrew translation of Yalkut Mamloyas. So where he got that from, Vesachnisht. Anyway, Omalei Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, but Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says to him, Akiva, Malach Eitzel Agada, what are you doing involving teaching in being involved in teaching Agada? That's not really your strong point. Stop your teaching in Agada. And go to Negoyim Va'olos, which are complicated areas of halacha. Meaning, in other words, your strong point, Rabbi Akiva, is analyzing halacha, even the most complicated halachas. Your strong point is not Agada. You don't know what you're talking about in Agada.
Because it's a
What was
wild
it? He
thing.
says, Tzfadeya achas hoisa. It was, in fact, only one frog, Shoka lahem vehem bo, but it made a noise, it croaked, and all of the other frogs came running, following its voice. So therefore, when Rabbi Lozer is saying that it was one frog, that then the result was that it filled up the whole land of Mitzrayim, that's according to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Lozer and Azai would disagree with that.
Interesting.
Now, So Maharsho explains that Maharsho explains that what the machloikus is as follows. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah would rather say that it was only one frog and then all the other ones came, because we said until then the machashvim were thinking that, until, remember, this is Makkah Sfadei, it's only the second Makkah. The machashvim are thinking that Moshe is doing it with kishuf. Only when it comes to kinim do they realize that it's not. So now Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying that it made a noise and all of them came. So that means the Mitzrayim thought, well, that's exactly how our kishuf works. We use our kishuf and it gathers creatures from all over, as opposed to if as opposed to he's saying if it was one frog from which more and more frogs are coming out, then Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying that's not the kind of thing that the machashvim were able to do. So they would have already realized at that point that it's not kishuf, but rather etzba elikimi. And the fact is, we see that they only recognized that when it came to makas kinim. The idea that they were hitting it, by the way, that does come from the Medrash, that they were hitting it, and there is a vort on it from the Stipler that says an interesting point, that you think about it, the first time they hit it and frogs are coming out, didn't they realize that it's counterproductive and they better stop?
Well, and the answer, that first time they hit it.
No, but every time they're hitting it, more and more coming out. The answer is, the Stipler says on this, you see from, I think it's the Stipler, it might have been actually his son, Reb Chaim Kanievsky, I don't remember, it was one of them. Anyway, he said, you see from this a lesson, you see from this a musudika lesson about how people are when they get angry. They don't know, these guys are angry, they're furious, they're hitting it, and they're not even thinking how counterproductive it is and how they're just making things worse and worse, because they're beyond reason at that point. So a person needs to realize for themselves to not get into that situation in the first place, otherwise it's making the same mistake as the Mitzrayim and hitting the frog again and again.